Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Visiting Oregon State on Saturday, big game for the Beavers. Utah coming off an emotional victory, an impressive victory over Arizona State. I only bring the best on the show. Josh Newman, Salt Lake Tribune, nobody better covering Utah football. Josh, thanks for making time for us.
I appreciate you having me, John.
The win over Arizona State, very emotional. Kyle Whittingham in the locker room afterwards, man. I mean, really impressed with what they're doing. Were you surprised by that second half?
I was surprised by the second half. And look, not just because of the emotion and, you know, it's the first home game since Aaron Lowe's death. You know, you put all that to the side. Arizona State, you know, was in pretty firm control of that first half. I thought, you know, the Sun Devils offense with Jaden Daniels at the wheel was, you know, up and down the field. They were getting whatever they wanted. The Utah defense was giving up huge chunks of yards. And I didn't know that, you know, that Utah could go into halftime and, you know, do enough things and make enough adjustments where that could become a game. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Utah offense gets the ball to start the second half, and Cam Rising goes right down the field. And the Utah defense gets a stop, and Rising goes right down the field again. And, you know, pretty swiftly, you know, the entire tone of that game changed. You know, I'm not so surprised that Utah won that game, but I am surprised at just how the game started and how the game finished, because that was very unexpected.
The emotion that Utah football has been through as a program, can you help our listeners understand sort of emotionally why that game was so important?
I mean, look, it's been a long 9-10 months around here. I mean, everybody knows about, you know, Ty Jordan's death on Christmas night, and then, you know, 9 months to the day of that, Ty Jordan's best friend, Aaron Lowe, is shot and killed. And, you know, that's a kind of a cloud that, you know, that has been hovering over the program. It's going to continue to hover over the program. And, you know, the Aaron Lowe situation is sadder and messier, because, you know, that was a crime. You know, he was shot and killed. You know, I thought the bye week was well-timed, right? After Aaron Lowe's death, you know, they were able to kind of collect themselves during a bye week, and, you know, they obviously decided to push forward, and, you know, there was a candlelight vigil on campus, and, you know, they beat USC, they went to Aaron Lowe's funeral 2 days after that, so there's been a lot going on here. And I think everybody deserves credit. I think the players deserve credit for, you know, for honoring their friend and their teammate and pushing forward. And I think Kyle Whittingham and Mark Harlan, the athletic director, the adults in charge, they deserve credit for, you know, helping to shepherd everybody forward. It's been a very difficult time around here. And if you had told me a month ago that this Utah team would be 3-0 and leading the Pac-12 South under these circumstances, these unfathomable, tragic circumstances, I would have thought that there was no way that that would happen. And I'm still sitting here on Friday, you know, the eve of the Oregon State game, and I'm still somewhat surprised that Utah is in this position. It's been very, very impressive under some very tough circumstances.
Is there a danger of a letdown in this one?
This does feel like a letdown game, but I think this Utah team is really playing with purpose and with energy. They're playing for each other. As I've said, they're playing in honor of two fallen teammates. I think this coaching staff really has this group, you know, pretty focused. Now, look, a trip to Corvallis is never easy. You know, and Utah has fared well recently going to Reser Stadium. But, you know, Kyle Whittingham said on Monday that, you know, for whatever reason, he can't really zero in and pinpoint why, but a trip to Corvallis is generally pretty tough. Now, look, this particular trip to Corvallis for this Utah team does not look like it did 2 months ago, right? If you were looking at the schedule back in July, back in August, you're looking at what Utah has, you're probably circling Oregon State as a win. But Oregon State has played well, And Oregon State, you know, they can run the ball, and they're scoring, third down, the whole thing. This Oregon State team is playing better than any reasonable expectation. So for that reason, this trip is, I don't want to say trap game, but it does feel like maybe a spot for a letdown. But I do feel like Utah is playing at a pretty high level now. And, win or lose, they're not going to be caught off guard by Oregon State. I can guarantee that.
We spent the summer and the spring talking about Charlie Brewer. What are the Utes getting out of the quarterback position? Because that didn't work out.
Yeah, that's an understatement, John. No, the Charlie Brewer situation did not work out. And look, they've been energized by Cam Rising. Rising comes in late in the third quarter at San Diego State on September 18th, and things, they weren't totally clicking. They weren't firing on all cylinders, but the offensive line started playing better. Rising was spreading the ball around. They looked better, even though they lost that game. Then you get into a situation where, okay, Brewer leaves. Rising is now the unquestioned starter. Rising is getting all the first-team reps. In the middle of that, the offensive line, which was banged up late in camp, early in the season, the offensive line is getting healthy, and there's cohesiveness. And it feels like with each passing game, this offense is looking better and better. I think Rising in the second half against Arizona State, I think he was like 13 of 15 for 140, a couple touchdowns, no picks. So with each passing game, this offense is looking more and more competent, and Rising is looking more and more confident. I don't think there's anything, to it more than that.
Josh Newman, Salt Lake Tribune, is our guest. Utah early in the year, I picked them to win the Pac-12 South. Okay, I picked them, and I was feeling good about them. Then I watched them, and that typical physical at the point of attack Utah team just wasn't there. Wasn't there in BYU. Wasn't there when they played San Diego State. What changed? Did they just get guys back, or is this coaching? Kyle Whittingham, 61 years old, just getting his guys' ears.
I think they got healthy. I mean, I don't want to make too much of that. I mean, look, there is some inexperience along the offensive line, right? A guy like Nick Ford has played in, 35, 40 games across all positions. That's an experienced guy. But a guy like Jaron Kump, a pretty highly touted left tackle, he's only played like 8, 9, 10 career games. So he may be good, but there's a lot of inexperience there. So on one hand, there's a lot of inexperience, right? Guys didn't play in front of crowds last year. So, okay, you're going to pro at BYU in front of 65,000 people. That's, that's tough to adjust to if you've never dealt with that. So the experience factor is one. And yeah, I think the health factor was a huge component of this whole thing, because look, we got to like mid-August, August 20th or so, and, the offensive line was pretty banged up. And they went into the opener against Weber State. Offensive line is still banged up. It's tough to go into a place like BYU. It's tough to play an experienced quality Mountain West team like San Diego State when your offensive line is banged up. So I think the major component is, yeah, guys just got healthy. And when guys get healthy, you can practice as a unit. You can, build chemistry, build cohesiveness. And here we are. It's game seven. I'd say they're not 100% healthy. They're a tad banged up now, but they're as healthy as they've been at any point since like mid-August.
Everybody knows Oregon State's going to run the ball. They're going to try to run the ball. They've done it. This is what they do. It's their identity. They're not a passing team. Front seven of Utah. Can you give us a scout on them?
Yeah, front seven of Utah is, that unit was a little banged up also, okay? You've got a guy like Bione Mawala at defensive tackle, fifth-year guy. He's out for the season. Junior Tafuna, who is a freshman, he has stepped in at tackle, and he's been very, very good. Mika Tafua had one defensive end spot. He's not that kind of, power edge rusher that Bradley and I was, but Tafua increasingly here is getting to the quarterback, and he's being disrupted, and he's making plays. Other defensive end spot, it's not a mishmash, but it's, a couple of freshmen, Van Fillinger, Xavier Carlton. They've kind of mixed and matched roles there at the other end spot. The defensive line at Utah is kind of sort of like the offensive line in that there are some pretty experienced pieces, but not everybody is experienced. There's some green there. There's some freshmen that haven't been through a whole season. But just like the offensive line, the defensive line is coming along. they are increasingly playing better. As I said, Tafua is really coming along here. Had a bit of a tough start to the season, but he's playing better now. And the thing with Utah in terms of their D-line, year in and year out, no matter the personnel, no matter the graduation, NFL draft, whatever, they expect to be able to plug guys in with depth. They have depth up to like 10 or 12 guys. They expect to plug guys in, and they intend to stop the run. That is Kyle Whittingham's, a big piece of Kyle Whittingham's football DNA is to stop the run. So they're going to go into Corvallis against the best rushing team in the Pac-12, and they expect to stop the run, and that's never going to change.
Josh Newman, our guest, beat reporter, Salt Lake Tribune, covers Utah. Kyle Whittingham, he'll be 62 next month. I was reading your mailbag, and fascinating questions from Utah fans who, like, I view Kyle Whittingham as, like, you know, one of the best coaches. Maybe he and David Shaw. I look at those two guys in the Pac-12, and I say, okay, those guys have done it a long time at a high level. How much longer do you think Kyle Whittingham coaches?
Great question. He has said publicly that he does not intend to coach past the age of 65. Look, he's a father. He's now a grandfather. He has never painted himself as a lifer, as a full lifer coaching until he's like very old and gray. So if you take him at his word that he won't coach past 65, it's like, okay, he'll be 62 this year, 63 next year. So based on that timeline, I guess he's not going to coach past 24 or 25. Now we'll see. I mean, look, priorities change, mindsets change. I myself keep coming back to the fact that, look, this has been a very taxing year for Kyle Whittingham. Between you had two player deaths, you dealt with a COVID-19 pandemic, which was, you know, quite taxing for a lot of reasons. So I don't know. Would I be shocked if he walked away now? Maybe not. Maybe not. But I will take him at his word that he will not be coaching past the age of 65. He has given no indication that he wants to be coaching past that.
Andy Ludwig, offensive coordinator there, play caller, quarterback coach. People in our state know him from his time at Oregon. Is he having fun? Does he look like that? Does that offense look like now with Cam Rising that he's having a good time with it?
Andy Ludwig never looks like he's having fun. Never. He's got this scowl on his face, this serious look. But no, but seriously, things are rolling right now. Things are working. Rising gives them a different type of dynamic than Brewer did. And I agree that Brewer should have been named the starter out of camp. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, that Rising should have won the job. I do think Brewer should have been the guy. But it's clear that, you know, Rising is, you know, look, he's got the arm. He can sling it. He is capable of leaving the pocket and doing it with his legs. Andy Ludwig has called a small handful of designed keepers for Rising. And, you know, look, they had the flea flicker touchdown against USC. He's gone deep a couple of times to, you know, Devon Vele and Jalen Dixon and Brand Keithy. So everybody seems to be having a little more fun now, right? This Utah offense is diverse. You know, the running back situation kind of been like a merry-go-round, but they seem to have settled finally on Tavion Thomas, who, you know, had some ball security issues early in the season. Those are fixed. So, look, when things are rolling, when you're scoring a bunch of points, look, they scored 35 points on a very good Arizona State defense. When things are rolling like they're rolling, you're not going to get anything but smiles and good quotes to your stories and guys in a jovial mood. So that's been good to see.
All right. One of my researchers, and we go deep on this show, says that I should ask you about your Halloween Kit Kat disaster. Did you have a – what happened with the Kit Kat?
Oh, man. I'm not a fan of pumpkin-flavored things. It's just not my vibe. My wife had a bag of, you know, mini candies, right, like you see at Halloween. I see a Kit Kat, unwrap it, pick it up, put it in my mouth, spit it right back out. Pumpkin pie-flavored Kit Kat, John. It's a sacrilege. Sacrilege. Ruined my whole day.
I feel the same way about, like, you know, those Doritos-flavored taco shells at Taco Bell? Why are we doing that? What are we doing? What are we doing with Oreos? Can we just have the regular Oreo? I don't need a bunch of flavors.
John, they make carrot cake Oreos. That's another sacrilege. It's terrible.
I love it. Josh Newman, I appreciate you. For people listening, follow him on Twitter. Covers Utah. If you're an Oregon fan, Oregon's going to go to Utah in November. Oregon State gets him this weekend. Read Josh Newman. Josh, thanks for making time for us.
John, I appreciate you.
Josh Newman, Salt Lake Tribune. Great stuff from him. What's on tap this weekend? Find out next. Coming up later in the show, Martin Jarmon, UCLA Athletic Director. He'll be joining us top of the hour. Oregon at UCLA, College Football Game Day. And they're holding Game Day this time out, not at the Rose Bowl. They're not doing it because it's like 35, 40 minutes away from campus in Westwood. So they are going to hold Game Day on campus at UCLA so that students can attend it. I think it's the right move by Game Day. I also think it's interesting because Chip Kelly is supposed to make an appearance on Game Day at 7:30 in the morning. That leads us to What's on Tap.
Now, it's time for What's on Tap and What's on TV at the Independent on the BFT.
Love that. What's on Tap this weekend? Well, Oregon is playing at UCLA. That'll be the Game Day game, but the Ducks and the Bruins will kick off on ABC at 12:30. Nice 12:30 game for your weekend. Oregon State and Utah playing a little bit later in the day. If you're an Oregon State fan, this is a big football game, Oregon State and Utah. But that game is at 4:30. That's not terrible. That's on the Pac-12 networks. Rest of the Pac-12 slate. Of course, you've got BYU playing Washington State on FS1 tomorrow. That's a 12:30 kickoff. Colorado's at Cal, also at 12:30 on the Pac-12 network. USC, Notre Dame. Watch the Trojans get boat raced by Notre Dame. Everybody taking it out on USC football. 4:30 on NBC. Of course, the college football weekend would not be complete without talking about some of the big games going on elsewhere around the country. The SEC, Georgia and Florida on CBS. That is also a 12:30 kickoff. And Ole Miss and Auburn. That one taking place on ESPN. That is a 4 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. That's what's on tap this weekend. I will be tuned in myself, of course, covering the Oregon-UCLA game at the Rose Bowl. I've been doing something cool on Instagram, too. If you follow me on Instagram, at John Canzano on Instagram, no BFT there, just John Canzano. You can peer into my life, of course, and you can see a lot of photos of Anna and the kids. But I started posting these videos of various stadiums that I visit. I always, when I walk into a stadium, try to pull out my phone and record sort of the walk up to the stadium. And I started doing it because I realized that not everybody gets to walk through the tunnel at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum and walk in and see the playing field. And, you know, and to me, it was one of my great joys as a kid was walking, like you drive to Candlestick Park, you park in the parking lot. It's not the prettiest place to park. I grew up there. You're looking at the outside of this incredibly large concrete and plastic stadium. Then you walk into the stadium and you had to kind of walk up around these walkways that were kind of like spirals. It was an old 1970s style stadium. You've been in one. But the joy for me at Candlestick was always when I arrived at the tunnel that took you from the concourse to the seats in the stadium. Because to me, as I walked in there and walked into those tunnels, it was the anticipation of seeing the field. It was hopeful. It was exciting. I know that when I got to the end of the tunnel, I was going to look out onto the Candlestick Park grass, whether it was a football game or a baseball game, and I was going to see.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.